Thank you for joining me on the phone, Randy.
Always happy to.
You had a interesting, controversial story in the paper. I don't remember what day it was, August 7th?
Yeah, this was the story about the woman who was upset that the DA pleaded down what was originally charged as a sex abuse case. And it was unusual in a couple of regards. The woman's mother reached out to us with some emails that she had sent to Sherry Kaloya complaining about the reduced charges. And then we got in touch with the mom and we got in touch with the woman who was involved. And they both agreed to be named, which we don't ordinarily name sex abuse victims, just like any other news organization, unless somebody kind of proactively says, yeah, I use my name. And in this instance, the victim wanted to bring attention to the case and had been active on social media anyway. So what had happened, she was living with a guy, and they had a child together. It was clearly a tense relationship. What she told police was that she was working at a waitress job, I believe in Glenwood, lived in Rifle, and stopped on the way home to get, I think it was Mike's Hard Lemonade, and wanted to just have a conversation with her partner, who, when she got home, according to what she told police, was very angry, said that she'd taken too long and accused her of cheating, and the allegation was that he put his hand down her pants and grabbed her to check to see if she had been cheating. Sorry to be graphic, right, but it's impossible to tell the story without that level of detail.
What kind of conversation happened in the newsroom when you decided to publish that story?
Well, it was kind of along the lines of what I just outlined. I talked with the reporter. Mom had reached out to us first, and initially we were thinking, well, we wouldn't name the person. But on the other hand, the guy pleaded guilty to something like interfering with telecommunications. He had held the woman's phone so that she couldn't call for help. And that is a misdemeanor of the same level as the sex abuse charge was, which unlawful sexual contact or something. I don't have the story right in front of me. You know, I suggested that if we could get a hold of the actual victim, that would be better than the mom. And we did, and she was pretty proactive about saying, you know, it's okay to use my name. The reporter had noticed that she had been public with it on social media. And I have, the places I've worked in the past, back in 1990, the Des Moines Register won a Pulitzer Prize for telling the story of a woman who was raped. And she came to us at the time and said, I want you to use my name. I want you to tell my story to help remove the stigma of sex abuse. And our editor at the time, Geneva Overholser, had written a column about sort of the double standard or sort of the stigma attached to women who are sexually abused being somehow tainted in the public eye when it was no fault of their own. And so, you know, that informed my thinking, and that's really been the policy at the other places where I've worked, that you
sure
don't name sex abuse victims unless they kind of proactively want to be named.
Right.
And I think that for her and her mom to agree to put their names out there publicly lends some credence to their complaints. And since the guy involved, you know, essentially pleaded guilty to a relatively minor misdemeanor, it's also a little bit of a question of fairness. If we're going to name him, shouldn't we name the accuser? And it also it highlights really the difficulty that the DA faces in this case. And I think that's a really important point here. You know, we got a lot of comments on the story, and the DA is in a re-election race.
She wasn't happy about it. I know that.
Sure.
It didn't make her look very good or her office,
didn't,
right?
But and the point I do want to make is that there's no physical evidence in this case. There's no rape kit. There's no independent witness. And the guy denied it. So it's his word against hers. And what Sherry said was, I couldn't prove this to a jury. I think she's in a really difficult spot. You know, do you put the effort into prosecuting a misdemeanor for which it's really he said, she said, and that's the only evidence that you have? Or do you get the guy to plead guilty to an equivalent level charge, which is what she did? And I thought, I felt like Ryan Summerlin, our reporter, did a nice job of laying out the issues in the case. I thought it was a story that was worth doing, despite the fact that the DA is in an election campaign and kind of unavoidably it's going to make her not look great. But I felt like the story had adequate nuance to explain the legal issues involved. And when people read these stories and complain about plea bargains, they really should understand that the vast majority of criminal charges in the United States are settled by plea bargain.
Right, they are. You don't go to trial that often.
We wouldn't be able to have a functioning system if everybody went to trial.
No, absolutely not. And our prison system would be even larger, most likely. Or maybe not, based on at least the juries I've seen in Pickens County. They're pretty forgiving.
Right.
What's not so forgiving in Glenwood Springs is the new smoking ban. The council passed this under the auspices of public health, right? Even though it was really targeted toward the homeless.
Well, we advocated this editorially and did for about a year. It is about the environment that the town is creating for families who come here to get away from the Front Range, to get away from crowds. And, you know, our sidewalks can get fairly crowded. They can get fairly narrow, including during the construction. But, you know, after that, a large number of downtown business owners who went to council and complained about the cigarette butts that they have to clean up every morning. The council did make a provision where people can go outside and smoke after 10 p.m. as a concession to bar owners, but, you know, told the bar owners, clean up the cigarette butts on the street. I generally think that it is good for the community. I think it's good for our tourist environment. The city doesn't have signs up yet.
When did it go into effect?
It went into effect last week. The council approved it, and then there was a legal advertisement that, you know, provided notice, and then it took effect last week. They don't have signs up yet. They'll be adding signs. And I talked with Terry Wilson, the police chief, about enforcement. And it carries a $200 fine, which is pretty stunning, actually. And, I mean, when we wrote the editorials, I was thinking, you know, $25. And then if you're a smoking scofflaw and keep doing it and keep getting caught, the fine can escalate from there. Obviously, the police approach is going to be to warn people to say, put out your cigarette.
Sure.
Only if somebody becomes belligerent are they going to get a ticket.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully it makes just for a more pleasant environment for visitors and downtown workers.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Charlene.